Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. Creativity, repression, and the plight of the suffering artist. I have so much to say about this, but I'm not going to keep it rather short. I'm not going to ramble on because I have just a few things to say about this that I think will make sense to people who already hear this work, which is things like creativity, power, just different things that have to do with traits that we have are connected so directly to emotional repression that you can't separate it. So someone who has creativity repression would also have anger repression, for example, and or sadness or hurt repression. Almost usually what we find is that. And so it's not just creativity repression apart from emotions or your life or your experience. It's part of the repression of self. Creativity repression is just self-repression. Holding self back because it's fear of being yourself, quite simply. We all know that on some level, but how does it operate? By holding certain emotions back in life and in relationship, you then hold yourself back in your creativity. It's not safe to be yourself in life or relationship or to create authentically for the same reason. It's that simple. And so the answer to creativity repression is emotional repression work. It's the same thing as everything else. If we have to hold ourselves back there, we have to hold ourselves back here, everywhere. We have to hold ourselves back in sex, as I said, and sexual liberation is tied to spiritual liberation. It's all the same mechanism. And because when we do the emotional repression work, you'll see that your creativity just comes online naturally. It's what you are. Whatever you were holding back in terms of emotion gets expressed. That aspect of you opens up. Your creativity is natural. You don't have to force it. There's no block. You don't create if you don't want to. You create if you want to. But there's a flow to it. There's a naturalness to it. It's not forced. You're not trying to get anything from it. And that's what makes it enjoyable. Because when we have a lot of stuff on it, it's not enjoyable. Like, I'm an artist. Or I'm not good enough that gets piled onto that, right? Or I'm unlovable, I'll never make it. There's something wrong with me. I'm not as good as. I used to work with actors struggling in Hollywood, musicians, artists who couldn't make a living and had really heavy deficiency stories and suffered, even though they were very, very talented. They couldn't make it. And they suffered so greatly because of it. And many, many weren't willing, of course, to go to the root of repression. I didn't know how to take them there at a certain stage. But now that I do, I wonder how many artists will come here and those who have some creativity that just will not come online for them. Because the answer is in the science. Look, the science says emotional repression creates our suffering. Holding our creativity back is part of our suffering, and it is that simple. And the answer is that simple, too. To get to the mechanism that holds that back so that we can be ourselves and create naturally with flow and enthusiasm. It sounds all too good to be true. It's because we've denied that within ourselves, that potential. That's all within us. It's unrealized. We don't have to do anything to be creative. We just have to bring the parts of ourselves that we're holding back online in awareness. And then there it is. Whatever we are will be expressed quite naturally. Stay tuned, I have a little bit more. For what it's worth, the reason that I started that way, well, because it's the most important thing I can say in this episode is the most important thing that I think I said in the love repression episode, and sexual liberation is tied to spiritual liberation. They're all making the same point. Is that I'm aware of the people are drawn to love repression work, creativity repression, power repression, sexual repression to some degree, but people aren't always running or flocking here to do anger or hurt or sadness repression because we fear that so much, the expression of those particular emotions. So I want to remind people that this is an entire path that includes it all. But you really, you'll see yourself that our greatest fear is just in being ourselves. And that includes that we have to connect the creativity repression, love repression, power repression, sexual repression, all these traits or things to emotional repression. And once you understand that, I'm just trying to make that point, then we can go, we can move on and talk about creativity repression. But it's important for me because in an experience, I've seen all of those things connected to emotional repression, like anger and or hurt, sadness. And yes, shame's involved, but that's for another day. Guilt. Because we're going to talk about creativity repression. And I mentioned, yeah, I mean, I used to work. I've had a great run. I intend to have a lot more. But I have worked with a lot of, back in the days when I was like a lot of teachers helping people with who are you, you know, just questioning identity and especially like core beliefs and identities. Like I said, with some struggling actors, you know, not only in Hollywood, people act in different places. They would often come to me. Yes, in my treatment centers, we had celebrities come. I can't tell you who those are. Not a lot, but a few. But that's not what I'm talking about, because they were often coming for a pit stop, you know, just like coming to get sober. And sometimes they would stay for long. But this wasn't in treatment I'm talking about. This is inquiry, although we did inquiry in treatment. This is online working with people who are struggling in their particular field more, including painters and poets. And so all these folks I've been working with for years. And in the beginning, when I didn't know any better, I was just helping them look at identity and core belief. So I thought that was the most core thing. I hadn't gotten to my own anger repression. So obviously you can't take someone deeper than you've gone or I've gone. So I am inviting, as I've said, artists, even if you don't call yourself that, that identity is limiting anyway. But if you have creativity repression, come here, but come forewarned that you can't come and try to disconnect that from emotional repression, anger, sadness, or hurt, and the fear of those things. Because if you do, it's a bypass. These artists, back then when I was working with them, that was a bypass that I was doing. They were doing, that's what so many people are doing, not getting to the root. And what is the root? It's the fear, the deep fear, frozen fear that we have stored in our bodies since childhood. And when I would work with these struggling, I want to say struggling, that was just how they would say it. You know, they would go to auditions, they would put their best effort in, and then they would just not get the role and just feel like they're just not good enough, unworthy, they should quit. And would beat themselves up until they could muster the energy to go to another audition. And then they would come in to me and they wanted, you know, like a lot of people just want to feel better and think better about themselves. They don't necessarily want to get to the root of suffering, right? And I didn't either, apparently, right? So, hey, but now I think the invitation here is you got to be earnest about it. And the question that we have to deal with here, that's like, to me, it's the elephant in the room on this subject, is that with some people, it seems like that you have to suffer to create. You know, I felt that way. How do you divorce your creativity from your suffering? So we say sometimes, right? Well, we'll deal with that. But in working with all these different people, that's a common theme that we all had. It was our identity. You know, creativity for many of us is an outlet for the pain of childhood. I mean, look around. If you look at the rock stars like Kurt Cobain, for example, who so talented, I mean, it's of course subjective, but he really did break ground in terms of the rock, changing rock music, and the energy that he had behind Smells Like Teen Spirit, their breakthrough album. It just wasn't sustainable, and he went downhill, and then of course either was murdered or killed himself. But he was saying he was burning out already, if he talks about his childhood and the angst and the trauma of his childhood. And Billy Corgan, the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins, these are people that I looked up to when I was playing music in the 90s in my own bands. He said, you know, I think he said every rock star has this angst because they didn't get what they needed. They were hurt when they were kids. And they're either trying to get back at the people that hurt them, or they're seeking love, a validation, approval from others, or both. That's just true. But that's also just human. So we don't have to suffer this way, though. So many people who are creative never even become famous or get their art recognized or get the accolades they're seeking. And there's so much suffering in it. I hope to like illuminate a new way of looking at this today. I've already given you most of it. It's tied to emotional repression, but there is a picture that needs to be painted, mostly with my own experience that keeps it honest. I mean, just like you, any of you who are artists, maybe it doesn't matter what you create. When I was a little kid, it was always music. My whole life has been about music, and I don't share it publicly because I don't want to use the Scott Kilby platform to like sell my music. Although every now and then I will put it up. If you want to listen to a version of what I've done, it's called What a Sucka, S-U-C-K-A, What a Sucka, on Spotify, and the band is called Voice and Head. And that's the heavier dance music that I've done, and there's also some very light stuff and different like landscapes, different projects that I've done. During the time that I wrote, I want to talk about all this because I've lived this life. I want to talk about music first, but I've lived this life of just creativity is my life. I don't know how to say that. And many of you are out there like that. Like, if you couldn't create, you know, what would that be like? But it's not a compulsion anymore, but it was. And that started in childhood. It didn't start as a compulsion. It started as just, I enjoy creating and playing music. Me and my friends, especially when one friend across the street, we would dress up as Kiss with tennis rackets. And we both wanted to be Gene Simmons. And then whoever didn't get to be Gene Simmons, who was the bass player, would be Paul Stanley by default because Paul, but just wasn't as cool as Gene back then, the 70s. You had to know that. You had to be alive then to appreciate that. But this was my life. I grew up that way, just like many of you. And of course, being a gay kid, by the time I was age 7, 8, or 9, I was in front of the mirror dancing like and being Adam Ant. Do you remember Adam Ant? So if you do, and I'm not saying Adam Ant is gay, I'm just saying that you've got to understand gay kid context here. That I wasn't going to stay with Kiss entirely. So I had a wide range of taste from Debbie Boone, You Light Up My Life, to eventually, as I grew up, heavy metal and thrash music, and played in heavy bands in high school. And this is an interesting part of and this is also leads into creativity repression, because it started off fun and play, and then I was bullied from 4th to 6th grade, as I've said, and all those traits that were creative and unique, I had to stuff them down, and then music became my outlet, and I sat and played guitar from age 13 to 18 to hide from people and express myself in some way, and I learned to write songs too. So I went from acting like Kiss and Adam Ant and David Bowie to now I'm playing guitar and writing my own songs. And I can tell that there's this pain that I'm trying to express, of course, because I've just been bullied in my life. I had developmental trauma like so many people, buried anger and other things. So, you know, music is more than just a play. Now it's almost like I have to create. And this is what a lot of like so-called artists or songwriters feel. It's not something that they do. It's something that they have to do. But that comes from the trauma and the pain. And you don't have to create with that. You don't have to have that. But if that's all you know, then of course you might think, I have to suffer to create. You wouldn't know in another reality. And that we don't when we have trauma. That's our only reality. That we can't be ourselves in life, in relationship with our emotions, and we can't with our art or our pottery, or not fully, because it's just like anything. How can you? You know, like in sex, in relationship, in your career, in if you can't be yourself, and if how can you be yourself if you are holding back one of the primary emotions, the natural resources that humans have, anger, hurt, sadness, fear. You can't express it. then you have to show up as something that you're not. An artist will do. And right there with the artist identity is deficiency story usually, and lack. And we know where that comes from. If you follow this work, deficiency and lack comes from repression. It's emotional deficiency. We're holding back anger, hurt, sadness, whatever, creating that sense of emotional deficiency on the surface. There it is. I'm not good enough. I'm an artist, but I won't make it. I want to, but I can't. Whatever the block is, that is classic repression. But even that sometimes isn't enough for people, you know, to say, oh, okay, well, I'm going to do this work that gets to the root of that. And then, because this is our identities. This is, not everybody thinks of it as I'm an artist, but, or it's not, you know, that conscious. It's just like, imagine for a moment if you're someone who creates for a living, or just you do it naturally, you love it. That gets taken away completely right now. All of it. And you have no outlet for that. Does that feel threatening at all? Because when you're free, it doesn't. I mean, I'll just tell you, a guitar got ruined. This is a long story. But I couldn't play it anymore. And I've been looking for a new one. And I haven't felt the loss of that. But back in the day, that would have been, when I was really, really suffering, that would have been it. It was like, that's my whole life. And that's how it feels when you're suffering. And you think that the suffering is needed to create or to play or to write or paint. Or that's what it was for me. If it's not that way for you, great. It wasn't always that way. By the time I graduated high school and started playing in bands even more, by the age of 21, there was this record label that was interested in a band that I was in called The Swing. Guys, I have to tell you about this. I've told you about this before. Because I'm opening up more, I might tell stories more than once, so get used to it. But they're usually connected to the theme, and this one is creativity repression and the plight of the suffering artist. Here I was. The Swing is I have to say, the best band that I've ever been in, or the best project in terms of that really expressed who I am or who I was at that time. And it was me and three other guys, all from Southern Indiana, which was a very conservative area back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. So me, gay, sort of out in the musician scene, people knew that I was gay. Some people close to me at home didn't. But in the band were these three guys who all were very expressing their femininity fully, but through that gothic look. Do you remember that? If you're 40, 50, 60 years old, you know the gothic look. Black, still around, black fingernails, long black hair on guys. Sometimes other colors, but more of expression of femininity than masculinity. And the sound of the band was very feminine. But loud rock music. So it was like a new sound in a way for us. And we felt, and then we had record label interest. We knew it was something new because it's hard to explain. It wasn't electronic. There were keyboards in it, but there was guitar in it. It was very lush sounding. Like if you took The Cure and with early Smashing Pumpkins, Gish, if you know that music, and a little bit of Beatles for melody and harmony. Pretty lush harmony, actually. And I'll just go this far for those musicians. The melodies were chromatic. They would move in odd ways. And that's what was kind of unique about it. Anyway, and also kind of accessible. But anyway, the record label, you would think, this is great. I'm 21 years old. I'm going to be in a band. We're going to go, this is great, a new sound. I sabotage it. As soon as we get close to that interest, I'm going to go back to my previous band because I'm in love with a guitar player who's straight and who will never be with me. But I don't know why I'm doing this, because I think I'm in love. And that's more important than this record deal. But this was all driven, as I know now, by anger. Because when I got hurt, I was angry but couldn't express it. And I would sabotage things to get back. I was angry at myself and other people. This is how I would express it, by sabotaging. This is how we do it from repression. Sabotage. That's exactly how I did it. Because see, here I was about to make it. I was too angry at myself. For one, to think that I deserved that. I didn't deserve that at the very core unconscious level. I was also left my previous guitar player, the one that I fell in love with. I was angry at him. You see, I'd fallen in love with him, but he didn't love me back, but he couldn't. But that's exactly what my conditioning wanted, to continue to be small and unlovable and hold that anger back. I didn't know this back then, wasn't conscious of it, but I see it very clearly now, that how repression runs it. I was very angry at him, and that's why I left the band and went to the Swing, and the Swing happened to be, in my view, a better band. But I sabotaged that because I was angry at myself and I didn't deserve success, so I was angry at everybody, him and me. That's how I lived, but I never expressed the anger. And then in music, you would think, well, that's how I express myself in music. Well, I mean, the anger, for example, or the femininity. Well, the Swing, which was this band where they all expressed, you know, in appearance even, their femininity, and the music itself was very feminine. My voice was very airy and light, and it fit the sound perfectly, but I couldn't do it. I sabotaged it. See, there's the femininity expression or repression right there, which is the creativity repression. I wanted to express that, but I couldn't. Sabotage. And I was angry at him, the guitar player from my previous band. That's why I even got into the Swing. This is how repression runs a life. And I kept falling in love with guitar players, one after the other. And I would get angry, of course, but that buried it. I didn't know. So I kept sabotaging things and even sabotaged a record deal with a band in Nashville, as I told you guys before. Dizzy and the Superheroes was this other sort of post-alternative band, but we got record label attention from Smashing Pumpkins. One of our, you know, the bands that we loved, their record label was contacting us, and we were so close to a deal, and then I just took as many drugs as I could. Because I had fallen in love with this guitar player. And I was getting back at him, and I was angry at myself, but none of that could be expressed in the music or otherwise. Because it hadn't been fully expressed, it wouldn't have sabotaged. But I was angry at him. I didn't know it. And what better way to get back than to destroy the thing that he loves, the music, and our relationship, our creativity. And I couldn't express the anger because you didn't love me the way that I wanted. Because he couldn't, obviously, right? But when you're unconscious, you'll try to get people to love you who won't, because that's what unconsciousness wants. It's just pain. It doesn't want love. It tries, but it's suffering over and over when you're unconscious, you know? That's what my life was with anger repression. And that was creativity repression. These are bands that might have gone somewhere, but you would think the creativity was repressed or stifled. Yeah, well, sabotage. But I've also had writer's block, and that's what Lopton people think of when they think of creativity repression. It's just, I can't write. And that's the same sabotage. But it's so unconscious, we can't see it. Okay, stay tuned, and I'll enter that subject. The theme here is I didn't know what I was doing. Because the anger was buried. So I was unconscious to why my life was unfolding in this way. And writer's block just reminds me of crazy memories. Like, I would block my doorway at a house I used to own when I was addicted to painkillers, and I would take handfuls at a time, 30, 60, 90 within a day or a couple days. And I didn't want anyone around me, and I would block the door so that I could create music, but be so intoxicated that if I didn't record myself the whole time, I wouldn't even remember what I was doing. That's how out of it I was. And I thought I had to suffer that much to write music. And again, the only way I would retain anything that I did was to go back and listen to these tapes. So I had a bunch of tapes after all these days of many time periods of blocking myself in a house. And then when I would block myself, I would be blocked around writing. How symbolic. I would just sit there. And sometimes the thing I could be successful at was taking a lot of drugs, though, and I would just nod off as I was writing. And then the recording is going on, and I'm slurring my words and trying to give instructions to myself about how to do this on the guitar or how to. It's pathetic. You know? It's sad. No judgment. That's just my suffering. But if you look at someone like that who has no consciousness, that can't even retain what they're doing, has to record it, and then can't speak into the recording clearly enough to even understand it later. Yeah, I was blocked, but I wasn't blocked in taking the drugs. I was blocked in creativity. What was that? Well, every time I tried to write music, it was about some guy that hurt me. Isn't that what all music is about, is how somebody hurt us or love or something or so much? And that's what it was always about. So it was always about trauma, coming from trauma. But I couldn't see that. And it was like unexpressed anger and other buried things, like hurt and anger. But it was so unconscious, I couldn't feel it. So something was trying to be expressed. Why couldn't I express it? It's a good question. Why the block? Because at the unconscious level, we don't want to create freely in a flow state and just be unattached to that and be really free. No. And enjoy the creation. We don't want that. At the unconscious level where you can't hear, where the unconsciousness drives us, it's more like this. No, I can't. I can't. It's not safe. I can't express that. And it has to do with emotions, most of it. And it has to do with mom, dad, and people from the past imprinted in the body. And it's just driving us as we sit there and try to write or create or paint. Sometimes. I was taking those drugs to numb out of the pain and the story that was kind of like my manufactured presence, right, back then. But then I just couldn't, I just took it overboard. And that was driven by the repression too, because, you know, it's a state of suffering, excessive unconsciousness, really. That's why I know that I qualify as a suffering artist, all this, or I did. I mean, if whatever that means, just I know what that's like. I mean, you have your own story, but I left music after a while because it was just so painful. I couldn't even write music with someone who I'd be drawn to, like on this level that wasn't physical at first. This way, I watched this show Love is Blind on Netflix. I love it. It's great. I don't know why I love it. But Love is Blind to some degree, because I've started songwriting partnerships with people that I would never date. But there's something really intimate, especially when you're a gay man, to be in a with another man where you open up so much through creativity. You get to see a side of men, especially in our culture, that you would never see. And I would always pick these men who were often anger repressors. So they were peaceful and they were usually open to gay men. And so, of course, you know, it's reliving my trauma is what it was, trying to get acceptance and approval from people that like the people that bullied me, you know, because I always saw the bullies as they're the others, they're the other guys, the ones that I need love and approval from. They're not like me. They're different. I'm different. I needed their love and I kept chasing it. And that was just the repeat of the trauma. I wrote songs about how I couldn't get their love. That was the repeat of the trauma. I sabotaged the record deals when I would write those songs. That was the trauma. I ran to spirituality to get away from that and away from music. That was the trauma. Spiritual seeking was the trauma. All the anger buried, driving it. Talk about creativity, repression. How can I divorce it from my anger repression? I can't. But see, it's so buried that by the time I became a teacher and had the awakening, the shift, well, what that was a shift to presence, genuinely, but with repression and some trauma buried in the body. It's not embodied. So, but when the shift happened, it's like a lot of people share, you know, how they'll say, oh, it's like all bliss and love and light for a little bit or a couple years or whatever. It was. More like the lid off of any repression of creativity seemed to be off the lid. Because I wrote, like I said, 7 books in 7 years and 4 times as much music after that shift. And then it started to dim everything. The creativity, some of the byproducts of the realization. And then I went into this period that's like my blue period where I couldn't express. I stopped writing music. I stopped writing books. So I understand that block and where it comes from, because at the same time, that was my chronic pain was getting worse, and which was driven by anger repression. So it was all connected. And so in some ways, we can't even talk about creativity repression disconnected from all other suffering, because it has the same source quite often. The science tells us this. You can check your own body and see, though. When you're skillful, you can see it. But when you're more conscious, you can see it. If you're first hearing this, hopefully you can just feel it or resonate the truth of it. But your system will try to disagree with it, because especially the artist identity could squirm during this podcast. I can imagine that, because I think I would have many years ago, if I listened to something like this, it'd be like, whatever, you've suffered a lot, man. No wonder you went to spirituality, Scott Killaby. But I don't think I'm that unique of how my suffering was tied into all that and sabotage. And it took a long time, very long time, to see what the real root was. The real root all along was the buried anger and buried femininity and different things about myself that were never safe as a kid. That simple, repression. And the creativity wasn't either. Art projects that were weird or different than the class got made fun of by the boys. Anything that I did that was feminine, wearing stuffed animal or bringing stuffed animals or wearing different clothes or playing with girls and, you know, everything that was good about me. But we don't know that once we bury that stuff or suppress it even, that that's the stuff that makes us what we are. It's not just that we're awareness or presence. I came looking for that, right? That's a good way to just like wipe the slate clean. I just want to be pure awareness, because then I don't have to be the ego thing, but I also don't have to be anything that people don't like that I buried. I can just be the pure awareness. How pure can awareness be when repression is running the show still? Even if you can't see the repression itself, it's repressed, but you see the effects of it. I often say to people, if there's suffering in your life, then that's the best indicator that there's repression. You can trust that. But for artists and creative types, if there's a block there, or if there's sabotage, or if you know, I mean, I don't know if I said this earlier, because I do these segments at different times. And so I may have told this or said this. I apologize if I did. But when I think of like artists, because I know that there's some listening who are like, I still, even though it makes sense, Scott, I can't give it up. My suffering. I don't want to. Are you kidding me? That's who I am. I want you to think about how deep it goes. Look at how many actors have overdosed or killed themselves from depression, or rock stars, so many different people. And the price that is paid, even the people who make it quite often suffer so much, let alone all the people who don't. There's a systemic suffering there in the life of the artist or the creative type that is almost inescapable, because trauma itself is inescapable until we make it conscious and move to a different state of consciousness where it's not running things anymore. The repression, I mean. And how do you do that if you're sitting there listening to me and you're going, no, because I can't give up the very thing that gives me what I am. The paintings that let the world know who I am, the poetry that is my expression of me, you know. I'm not asking you to give that up. I'm saying, like, if you have four colors and that's all you've ever known your whole life, what if you had more colors? What would you be able to express? And what if those colors were also part of you, but you didn't know it? And all your life you're painting or expressing from a limited perspective, energetically even, like a limited sense of who you are and limited sense of how you can be in the world and your potential. And then you're creating from that. And then arguing in favor of that limited consciousness. See that? And that's what repression does. It just keeps us small, and we justify the suffering even because of the sense of self in it, you know? I mean, if you give, it's like if I give that up, who would then be the successful sculptor or the famous songwriter or the winner of America's Got Talent? But we just sell ourselves short because we don't even know a different state of consciousness. So how do I say to people, hey, the very consciousness that you're in right now will tell you that you want to stay there, even though it's limited, separate, deficient, comes from repression. You're holding yourself back and then justifying it all and suffering and then creating from that. The other part of that is that you don't want to get out of it because you're staying safe and getting love that way. How do you say that to people? Especially people who are benefiting in some way, getting love by their art or their creation. Or, you know, maybe it shifted a little bit more to suffering, though. And in fact, the more it shifts to suffering, it's kind of a gift. I had to leave music, as I said, because it was too painful. But teaching is its own expression. And I've had a block around that, too. Anyway, stay tuned. That and more. There's nothing wrong with, it's quite beautiful, creating, painting, sculpting, dancing, being good at some athletic sport. Whatever your expression is, it's all human expression. It's beautiful. And awakening will never extinguish that if awakening is done thoroughly and authentically. It will actually be the catalyst for even greater and deeper expression of authenticity. But people are afraid of that. Consciousness is evolving. There's a depth to this. And if you keep holding on to every ledge, not willing to jump off, you don't even get to experience the next depth. And yeah, that's really limiting. But we don't know that. If we really understood that, we would be doing inquiry on repression right away. But we're so afraid because of what happened when we were kids. We artists are no different than any other human in that way. It's just that we found a way to express, and we got something out of that. Love, validation, approval, attention. And that worked. And that's what humans run on. And so we're hooked into that until we're not anymore. And so I think a lot of people think, well, if I'm hooked from that, then I won't want to paint anymore or sculpt or play piano. And you know what? For a while, you might not. I didn't. So to be honest with you, the shift, the really non-dual shift happened in 2007. And from 2007 to 2010, I didn't really want to, I was writing books, but I didn't want to write any music or nothing came up. I couldn't still, for some reason, write music. But then 2010, I started to write and there was a whole bunch of stuff written. And I'm only saying that, to say that the people who go through like an awakening experience might experience a period of time in which something isn't yet expressed. Like, I don't know how to say it, because like there are different phases to awakening. For one is like you could be too stuck in emptiness. I was for a while to actually reconnect with music. And that was my trauma too, driving, wanting to be stuck in kind of an emptiness. And that's what was driving me to writing the books, because in some way I was using non-duality to get away from the anger repression and stuck in that expression and not able to express the more emotional stuff of music. And I see that now. But in 2010, something came online for me, but then it got shut down. That's what I'm saying. It's all emotional, because that was the anger repression speaking, wanting to shut me down, I should say, into my blue period. And if you don't recognize this, if you're going through a healing or awakening path, you might not see, well, what's driving it all. But if you really look every time, it's the same trauma and repression, the same mechanism. Stay safe, get love. You can't be yourself. You can't truly express authentically or create authentically, because no, it wouldn't be safe. You wouldn't get love. They might not like you. They might, whatever. You might be alone. That's what the unconscious says. Or whatever it says. And that's what runs things. It's kind of funny when you go to the unconscious and you really wake up at that level, because you hear people say, I want to be a famous this or that, or I want to be a successful. I'm thinking, that's what you're like, the conscious level says. But If you went to the body, it would say, nope, no, you don't. Can't do this. Can't do that. Can't express this. Not safe to do that. And so anything that involves any of those emotions, that's not going to happen. We're staying safe. That's our operating system for we artists too. And we think we're often so free, but we're because our operating system is based on emotional safety, we're not really that free. We might write some music that sounds pretty free or some art that's out there because maybe that's the only way we can express that. But what if your whole being felt the freedom? You were simply then expressing yourself naturally. You're not trying to use music or art or whatever to find something. You are that. You found what you are, what you were looking for, which is your authentic self, and then you're just expressing. If you could really hear that, anyone out there, you would say, well, that's the way. But see, you can't be in control when that happens. Like, you might not want to express a certain way then, and you might start expressing a different way if you go to the root, because you might find, for example, that you're still trying to get validation, and that's why you want to do that one thing. And when you go to the repression of hurt or sadness and you get to that, you're like, well, I don't really want to do that anymore. But I want to do this other thing. And that feels real. Because you trust your body at that point. But until then, it's all mind and safety and get love and approval. Survive. I've written so many songs that nobody will hear. I don't care. Because if I wanted to put my energy around music, I would. That was my whole life up until teaching. But to me, teaching, now that I'm out of the anger repression or have cleared that, is my way of expressing. To me, I don't really feel like a teacher, although people will say, gosh, you speak with more authority. But it's not that. It's that I know myself. It's like my authentic, I feel myself. I don't know how to explain that. And people will think that sounds like authority or confidence, and some person said, well, you're kind of arrogant sometimes. Well, apparently that's what that is. I'll look at it if there's something there, but things aren't always what we think they are, you know? I think that you'll find, too, that there's a power in what you are. Those of you who get blocked or who sabotage yourself as artists, there's a power just in what you are naturally, even if people don't like it. And that's what you're afraid of, right? We can't be driven on getting other people's love and approval. If creativity is the real reason we're here, if we really feel that, which I feel that's kind of what human life is. It's this creative, what is that process? It's amazing. But we keep blocking it. What if we didn't? What if you didn't? You can't imagine it. You can't control that. You can't map it out. You can have an intention. You can certainly have an intention, a very powerful movement in the world if you want with that intention. But you have to. When real freedom is where you don't know the outcome of anything. You can have a sense of like, well, I want to be like the best house flipper and make the most, I want to be on TV and be on those house flipping shows and be the most popular show. That's your intention. And of course, when you're really free, then you would just do that naturally. You wouldn't be focused on the result of that. You wouldn't be future focused, but you would be okay with dream. It's like a map or a blueprint. You're okay looking at the map every now and then to kind of know where you're at, but you live in the moment. You live as what you are, and it's your authenticity that makes you successful, that makes people like you and sometimes not like you. But you get to sleep at night and know that you're living your life knowing that you're authentic. There's a deep peace in it, because there's a peace with all the emotions, even the ones that you buried, and you just know yourself, and it just helps you in whatever you have an intention to do. Whether it's to be the house flipper or the next, who's the great artist today? Julia Michaels. My God. Love her. Julia Michaels is, if I can put her music in my Instagram shorts as much as I can, I will. You can be whatever you want. It's so cheesy, but it's true. And I'm not going to be your motivational coach. because that often just reinforces unconsciousness, because it speaks unconsciousness, because it speaks to our sense of lack. Because there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have to get anywhere. You want to make the unconscious conscious. So you can, your resources are right here. Unrealized, as Thomas Hupel says, potential in your body. It's your trauma. Dear artist, you should know that. But you'll fight this, and that's okay. As I've said before, I've loved you, many of you. Artist types. I mean, I fell in love with the guitar players. Love was blind, as I said. I was just, because of who they were and our relationship. It's a beautiful thing, but there's so much suffering in it. And we don't have to create. Well, I think I've covered everything to me. Like, I love doing it now, what I'm doing. This does feel authentic for me, because to me, even though I sound like an authority sometimes, it's just because this is my experience now and I can talk this way. And that feels very real for me. But I also, hopefully, I do it in a way that is, you can tell it's just me being me. Whatever the fuck that is. You don't have to know it in the mind. You just are it. It's not an it. It's a knowing. Somebody asked me that today. How do I know if I'm my authentic self? For an artist, I would say, you know how you always second guess your music? Well, you don't do that anymore, or your paint. No, you just create. And you really don't care whether people like it, because you're not in that for their love and approval anymore. You're not in it for that. So you might build something out. It might be fun. You might go create this album and become like really big. But it's not going to be the same thing as like the rock stars who kill themselves by age 27. The age 27 club. Because it's different. That's what I'm inviting people into. We're just scared of it though. If you knew it was your natural self, you would just want to go discover it. But because we don't know that, we're willing to hold on to the suffering. And have I said, though, I think I did, before I go to this next segment, because it's so important for artists to hear this. It's like when I talk to people who call themselves addicts, these labels are so close to a sense of lack and deficiency that can hook you in more than anything that I say, because that's connected right to the emotional deficiency, the buried stuff. It's unfortunate that the consciousness would, in some cases, identify with that even while they're listening to you're listening to the podcast, instead of really hearing it from presence and saying, oh, what he's saying is that these very stories that I'm seeing right now that are making it hard for me to hear him are the very suffering that he's pointing to. I hope you hear that. Stay tuned. I've got a little bit more good stuff. Well, so Dan McClintock, the co-developer of this work, he and I are both musicians. He's a very talented musician and songwriter. But he and I both channeled our music creativity, failed band stuff into we just saw the suffering in it. We've been on a suffering or seeking and finding path, both of us different paths for a long time, and then together for many, many years. We left the whole thing, and when we got together, it just became an expression, like just like music for us. A co-creation, he would probably say it too. So beautiful. This is the most beautiful co-creation I've ever been involved with Dan, because the work's been centered around repression work. That's so beautiful that we focus on the very root that would hold creativity back, and then this work is developed. And he's truly like a kind of like a brother in that with me. And I'll just say this now, I've never said this publicly, I almost did the same thing with him, but because we were doing this work, I did it. In other words, I had feelings for Dan. When we were developing this and doing inquiry together, because it's such an intimate experience when you open yourself to someone, I just thought he was the most wonderful human being, and I really loved Dan. But a lot of that was projection, because he just really is a good person and felt really safe, and I never felt safe like that with another person. Not anywhere close. Even my old bandmates because he has such an earnestness for inquiry like me. So there was just a sense of what we're doing together when we sat in the hot tub creating and doing this work was taking care of ourselves. But there was such a loving quality of taking care of ourselves. We were also taking care of each other in some cases a codependent way, though. And he might say he was more dependent towards me because I was the quote-unquote teacher that fell away. But, you know, codependency is codependency. As beautiful as that was, our co-creation, there was some issues in it. We had to separate and then... Anyway, I had feelings for him before all that, before the separation, early in the relationship. I started feeling that feeling of like, that I would have for my guitar players. We were also writing music together. So it was one of those relationships that's ripe for the repeat of trauma. And here it came, but it just looks like, oh, he's cute. You know, one day. But luckily, because we were inquiring and he could stand up and assert that he didn't say no, but I could tell that even though he was definitely questioning things like that, that it couldn't happen and we didn't. And there was a boundary there, and then we became best friends. Thankfully, I broke a pattern there. I don't know if he broke any pattern, but that was really my trauma because that was the first man that I'd ever opened up to in inquiry very intimately. So it was only natural that that came up. But it would have been bad for us. It would have been another sabotage because this work got created. So I'm so glad that we formed a friendship, and since then it's been very much a respectful, with boundaries, friendship. We push each other a little bit, but it's good. Like the best, probably the best relationship I've had outside of my romantic relationships. But really, he's like a husband without the sex. We don't have that kind of romantic relationship. But it's like a very, when you create with someone, it could be a group of people, a whole band or anything. It's a very intimate thing, you know? I really owe that. Thank you, Dan, for coming into my life. And thank you, this work, for not sabotaging that and getting close. I can see how people then, just real quick, how teachers would cross lines because it's trauma, you know, with students. And that was a real wake-up call for me, that period of time, because I saw that before that would have just been in a band where we were just writing songs together. But here I had become a teacher. And then he came in and we were friends, is how I saw it. And it felt like that old thing of a songwriting partner friend. It didn't feel like a boundary cross, but then I saw, oh, it is. And he felt that, but yes, it just worked out perfectly from there. Because this is about healing. At some point, though, we parted ways because we relied on each other for 2 years. We created this work. I wanted to include that in the story because we're talking about creativity. We started talking about repression early in the hot tub when we were developing this work, mainly sexual repression, because that was his topic he was inquiring into, and he shared that, you know, publicly. But so this has always been about repression. We always knew that that was the basis of it, but we didn't have the work. We hadn't created the inquiries to get to it. That came later after we parted ways and we both went into relationships. We continued to develop the work together from a distance. This, to me, feels less like teaching and more like creating, because we've created a path of inquiry that we think works really well to get to the root of suffering. So what a great story when you talk about creativity repression, to see that hopefully you've seen that it works. Because, I don't know, may not like my expression, but it's prolific. Okay, so I want to talk about the development of it because I want to get to the how-to. I'm not going to give you the method here on the podcast. Teaching or showing inquiry in a podcast is just uncouth. I don't know what about it, but I'm not going to do it. The tools are the tools, and I always send you guys there at the end if you're serious about it. But my reason for the podcast is just I feel such, I don't know, what's the word, empathy, or to people who have this desire or even a compulsion to create, but then it's just not, it can't be realized because that was my life. And I feel like it's just freedom now, real freedom in that area. And I just hope that I've made the point that it's connected to emotional repression, because you will try to skirt out of that issue. You are only human. And when you get here and I say, hey, I know you think it's creativity repression, and it is, but do you know that hurt that you said is part of your primary and one of your main emotions at you? Yeah, that creativity repression is connected to that hurt repression. Go there, that you can't express that hurt. But yeah, if you understand that, come one, come all who are ready to deal with creativity repression. I just wanted to remind you that when I had chronic pain, it was the anger repression that created that chronic pain, and I wasn't even thinking about creativity repression. That's why I'm a little bit reluctant to do these podcasts about love repression and creativity repression. It feels pretty safe when ferocious anger repression drove, I think, my cancer, my sex addiction, and my chronic pain, and frankly, my creativity repression. So I just want to be honest. You'll find what it is for you. So I'm not going to show the method, but what does it look like? I mean, I have to be honest with you here. It's like anything. You can do this work if you want. Oh, let me make sure that what I'm saying feels true here. Some people, we'll say it this way. Some people will do this work by like coming here because they have writer's block or just any issue, like they're depressed. Maybe they're not an artist or whatever. They come here because they've got pain. But this, okay, yes, you can come here that way, of course, because I started this work by having chronic pain. But what you'll learn, discover in the unconscious pretty early is that you're going to find the root of your suffering, not just the root of your creativity repression. You're going to see how that's connected to anger repression, for example. And you'll never be able to divorce the two after that, because it'll be insight. And you have to be really open to see that even though you're focusing on creativity repression, it's really about that buried anger. and you can get real freedom here if you remember that, and then you can just bypass if you don't. Because you really can't stick on that one issue is what I'm saying. You can come here because of this podcast, but you got to be earnest really about the fact that you can't. I mean, somebody said that to me the other day. Can we just come and work on one thing? Of course you can. But how do you ignore the fact that that one thing is connected to the driver of suffering, and that when you discover that, there'll be a natural curiosity and even a consciousness of how that repression is creating other things? And I guess that's the moment of truth, isn't it? Because how do you work with creativity repression that's connected to sadness repression, for example, and actually experience freedom in the area of creativity without fully going to the area of sadness? And if you go fully to the area of sadness, then you would then end suffering. And then you're in a different state of consciousness. It's not different than the now. The now is the now. But there are different degrees of presence and consciousness, and embodiment unfolds. And we don't need to be thinking of black and white, like you're either awake or not awake, because there are layers of unconsciousness. And when you really, really get to the root of it, now you're in this way of being, but which is, you might have started with creativity repression, but you got to the root of it. Now your creativity comes online in really authentic ways, but maybe different ways than they were before, or maybe the same thing you were doing before, but you're doing it in a different way because it just didn't feel right the way you were doing it before. That's how you saw me changing my teaching. I can't do it that way. Point to presence, see, because I discovered something different. So that felt too limiting and can't embody it that way for me. You might find that for you, that you have to express differently, that what's real for you is different than you thought. So in order to be that open, you know, if you come here just for one issue, you'll see that there's that control, isn't it? Still holding yourself back. Wanting freedom, you say on the surface, but do you really? If at the core unconscious level, all you want to do is stay safe and hold yourself back and get love. You have to contend with that the unconscious is saying that and running things. You discover that here when you come for creativity repression. that it's connected to all that. It's not a warning. It's an invitation. But the thing that I just wanted to do this podcast for is not just to connect it, to make sure people understand it's connected to emotional repression. You'll find it yourself in your body. But also this, I hope that I've answered, I need to take a little bit more time to answer two things. One is, what does it look like in your life, the practice, if you're an artist or you have creative block? And the other is, why the hell would you do it? Because you have to suffer to create. Some of you think, does anyone still think that listening? I know that you do. Your unconscious, remember, wants to suffer and it wants to sabotage it. Some people will not hear it. They have more suffering to do. They have more creating from the suffering to do. Until there's something that happens, whatever that is, grace, whatever suffering that is, that shifts us into this openness that there's actually a different way of being that's possible. Now, that be a different way of being, that you can describe that all you want, but that's your authentic self. It's like having your full palette of colors available to you in your life, in your relationship, in your art, in your creation. And that's what you're looking for as an artist, ultimately, is that self-expression. Self-repression gets right in the way of that, if you can see it. So your daily practice is, when you're ready, would be, do you use this work just to be able to write a song? You could. You could definitely do that. But if I started with to write a song, I would find, if I was an anger repressor, I would find I can't, for example. Something stopping me. At the unconscious level, you would feel the I can't. We have ways of like getting you to feel how it's running something. And then you would discover I can't. And we would go deeper into the unconscious and discover I can't what? You might say at first, well, I can't write. I can't express myself. I can't. But that's all on the surface, so to speak, or more conscious than I can't feel the anger and I can't express the anger. It's a childhood thing. It's developmental. We've had it for so long that we don't know it runs things in the dark recesses of our consciousness. So we discover it in this work and we see that's what's running it. And at the surface level, I thought it was like, well, I have writer's block. But that's kind of a way to stay safe from it because then I'm distracted. Yeah, I'm a poet, but I'm blocked right now. I can't even write a poem about that. I'm so blocked. So, and then I'm an artist, you know, so that's part of the story for some people. I'm blocked right now. Can't write. But we don't know why. And we have maybe a trillion stories. Remember the podcast, Trillion Distractions from the Source? If you watch all the podcasts, there's a whole context being created here. Especially and only if you do the work, but you can hear it even if not somewhat, that your mind will tell you anything to keep from going to the buried stuff when you're an artist or otherwise. Like, I need to be in this circumstance, I need to be in this house and with this environment, and I need to get away from this and this. Yeah, but still, you carry your trauma there. The thing that you could never express as the source of your pain that blocks you and sabotages you and hurts you in your relationship and creates any diseases or pain that you have is right there with you whenever you get all the external distractions away. So you might be able to write something there, but is that the answer? I think that we artists here have to ask the questions, why are we here after a while? When you get to deep somatic work, you do have to ask that because This can feel threatening because you're saying, well, I'm going to take this process into that? Yes. Instead of saying, I need to get over there away from these people, why don't you look at why these people feel like that you need to get away from them? Because that's your answer. Because if our music or our creation becomes a way of just how we escape, that's just a trauma response. Then that's part of how we respond to our own trauma. But what if you stayed right there for a little bit and felt into the discomfort and went deeper and found you're angry, but you can't feel it? It's that response that's deep that I'm talking about. And you can't express that, see? And you find it right there instead of leaving to go to the recording studio in the country, right? Or whatever. Go painting out on the beach. whatever. Because we can't escape ourselves, and we do it to ourselves. We're creating our own sufferings. We just carry it with us and pretend like we don't, and that we've gotten away from it so that we can create. But we can be more conscious than that. We can use our suffering as the palette on which, or the canvas on which we create. Everything that we do is a way into being ourselves. Every way that we suffer, when you're skillful, is, whether you're an artist or otherwise. So if I'm sitting here procrastinating, like, I really want to build a website because I've written some poetry and I want people to hear it, but I can't. I don't know why I can't, but I want to. That right there. How do you know it's repression? You might say something on the surface. You might say a trillion things, this trillion distractions on the surface. But do you really know fundamentally what stops you? And until you go to the unconscious level skillfully, how could you? It's buried. Don't you want to know? See, to me, that's part of creating, of being an artist, is to be conscious. Like that, what better? There is no better canvas than life itself, than awareness. You are an expression. And then to block part of you and try to express from that. Feel that? You deserve so much more. Your potential is waiting for you. But you got to feel some stuff that's below all those stories about being a writer. We're not really artists. That's very limiting, actually, that identity. It's like addict. So when you come here, just like addicts, you'll be of two worlds, and they'll pull at you. Because like if you're in addiction, you're going to want to use, go back to your whatever that is, and then you'll do inquiry and you'll see that's coming because you hate dad. And in inquiry, you'll feel more and more of that freedom. But then your nervous system will go, no, that's not safe. And you'll go back to your addictions, and two worlds will for a while pull you until those worlds are integrated. That when you have the urge to use, you use the inquiry that gets to the repression that drives the using. See that? And then there's something different happens, a different relationship with that. It's the same with like an artist. When you come here, I know. Because I know how threatening it feels when someone says, we're going to get to the root of the very suffering that you know how that you created all that great art with. Yeah, the very root of it. Yeah, we're going to get to that in that suffering. Yeah, you're going to jump on that bandwagon freely and fully? Probably not. You might be of two worlds. You might be of like, you go into inquiry to the buried sadness, how you can't express it, and you feel this energetic freedom, and you're like, oh, wow. That feels like more my integrated being, like, oh, and I want to create, I feel free. And then you get pulled into the artist identity. You go create something, and then now you're suffering, and now you're stuck in it. And there's a pull to that, because we stay safe and get love in that world, and we suffer. And you might be unconscious and asleep in it. And you might come back to inquiry, and you might think of them as two different things, because you know, at first it is that way, but no, it's not. It's the trauma driving everything. And you'll see it. So instead of, I mean, you'll do inquiry with everything, because you'll see it's like a key to your own potential when you're really earnest. And you wouldn't want to deny that if you have the keys that unlock that. If you don't have the keys, you can tell yourself whatever story and kind of get away with it. But if you know better, if you're more conscious, then you will become more earnest. I mean, maybe not. There's the pull towards back to, I have to suffer to create, but that's just the repression talking. Of course, we have to stay safe, get love, suffer. If you're going to listen to that your whole life, you'll get that your whole life. That consciousness, how could it even imagine a different consciousness that's in a state of flow and isn't attached to what it creates? I'll leave you with this little metaphor, because Freddie Mercury is one of my favorites. As he was saying in an interview, that when he would write, they would ask him about a song. Byron Katie said this too. They asked her about a book that she wrote, and they read a little passage, and she said, oh, no, that's not true, honey. And she was just saying what she had written has come and gone in her awareness. I appreciated that. And Freddie Mercury, in an interview, someone was asking him about Bohemian Rhapsody, the great Queen song. He said, oh, darling, no, I've moved on from there. I write songs, and then by the time you all love them, I'm on to the next one. And that there's a freedom in that, you know, as long as he's not checking out of his life. And I don't know, Freddie had some trauma, but Byron probably is feeling a lot of freedom there. And I want to invite you into that, where you are this, like, I hate to be a cliche here, you're a vessel through which whatever you want, you can basically have. I mean, there are some limitations to that. You got the body here, you can't fly necessarily yet, but as an artist or whatever you want to create, it's right here for you. It's hard to even know what you want with repression, frankly, because what we want unconsciously is to stay safe and get love and suffer. But as you start to clear that, you start to get more of a sense of what you want and what you want to create, what you really want to create and what you don't. And you'll see that's part of it too. You'll be like, I used to do that and that doesn't feel right anymore. But this does. And how are you going to know that? By trusting yourself only, no one else. And you can't with repression. You can't even know what you want. And how do you trust yourself when you can't trust these basic emotions that you've buried? So at first you have to trust the skills to help you see something so you can have more consciousness to begin trusting the skills more to all these areas in your life as an artist that you suffer. Whether it's being turned down at another audition, or you can't put up your website with your poetry, or you're a teacher who wants to write a book but you can't, or you've developed a new invention but you're stuck. It's all the same thing. It goes all the way back to childhood. It's an operating system. It's a core network, and we've identified it, actually. I hope this either, I don't know, if it didn't entertain you, I would rather invite you, actually, to take the test if you haven't started this work, which is, the test is always available at the bottom of killaby.com. It's a free repression test that shows it to you in your body and gets you started with those tools. And I'm also going to put the link to that test in the description here. But also in the description, I'm going to put the link to our May retreat. So we are doing an online retreat in May. It's the first time we've done this work publicly, except for Omega, where we did in live retreat. We're going to do another one in Omega this year, Omega Institute. But online, this is our first retreat with this work. So if you've been listening to me and you haven't been in the members area, but even if you have, this retreat will encapsulate everything that is this work, the context and the skills to get you started on this. I mean, very deeply, actually. It's not just like a lecture. There's going to be experiential work for sure. So if you want to join that, the link will be in the description. Thank you.